Parashat Shmos, the beginning of the book of Shmos. In 10 minutes, we're going to try to quickly summarize the parasha. Parasha re-records who came down to Egypt, that the Galut Mitzrayim began with 70 souls, and then we start expanding. The generation that came down passes away. That generation was very respected. The Egyptians didn't dare start up with Yosef and his siblings and Yaakov. And then a new king arises, or the same king with new thoughts, and he decides that the Jews are a threat. With that decision, he decides he has to take care of them, and if he takes care of them head on, then the people will say, this is immoral, we can't do this, the Jews might rebel. So instead, he has to be conniving. What does he do? Says, let's tax them. When they see that the Jews are being taxed unfairly and they don't react, so they say, okay, we could do worse. So they enslave them. And that's an interesting concept. Sometimes we think if we're nice and we let ourselves be smacked around, then things will get better. And that's a mistake. If you make yourself into a shmata, the world will treat you like a shmata. A person shouldn't let himself be smacked around. That's not to say that we don't have the concept that a person should be ma'avir al midotav, a person should forgive, and a person shouldn't hold grudges. But a person has to know the balance, that he doesn't let people push him around. And that's what the Mefarshim say, that over here the Jews let them push them around, they let them tax them unfairly, so they saw they could get away with that. So they went the next stage, they enslaved them. And they were disgusted with the Jews, they made them work befarech, different opinions what befarech means. Either farech is peh, rach, a soft tongue. They began and said, you want to be loyal citizens? That's always the Jews' weak point. The Jews always feel like they have to outprove everyone and show that they're loyal. So that's how the Egyptians came to the Jews also. You're loyal citizens, right? So you're going to help us build these special cities that we have to store the food. The Jews always feel like they have to prove themselves. This was true in Germany also, that the Jews felt they had to prove themselves and they gave up their lives in World War I fighting for the state. And the Jews always paid for it. So in Mitzrayim, the same thing happened. The Egyptians began with a soft tongue. They began with saying, come, be loyal citizens, help build, and slowly it turned into enslavement. And as a response to the perach, the soft mouth that was used in Mitzrayim, and paro, which are the letters of pera, bad mouth, we take the night of Pesach, which is Pesach. Our mouth talks Divrei Torah all night long. Yeah.
No, I'm not raising my hand.
Okay. So they start building these storage houses, and the Egyptians try torturing them, hoping this will cause them not to have children, and the Jewish people flourish. The Jewish people were working so hard, they didn't make it home. The prophet says that the way the Jewish people reproduced was thanks to the women. The men were wiped out. The men couldn't come home to go to bed. The women would come out to the men in the fields, and between the two fields, people used to make the fields go up. They'd have a clod of earth that was higher at the edge of each field so that you could tell this is the border of my field. Don't you dare take from it. And in between the earth that was piled higher, they'd lie down, and that's where they'd have their children. That's where they'd get impregnated. They didn't make it home to the beds. The women would have to try to entice them in. The prophet says in Shir HaShirim, Tachat ha-tapuach oraticha, under the tapuach, tapuach in Tanakh is not an apple, but an esrog. Under the esrog tree, I was enticing to you. And the women enticed the men. Oraticha, they did it l'shem shemayim. They wanted to continue the Jewish people. How did they do it? They'd bring out mirrors, and they'd beautify themselves. And then they'd look at the mirror and they'd tell the husband, I'm better looking than you are. And the husband would straighten out his hair and say, no, I'm better looking than you. And slowly they'd talk back and forth. And when a person sees affection, that turns a person on. That's why the halacha says that you're not supposed to show affection to your wife outside. Because if someone else sees it, that's also going to turn him on. So the Medrash says that one of the sages came to the Maharas HaMachpelah. And he saw Avram Avinu with his head on Sarah's lap. She was checking his head for lice, whatever that means. And suddenly they saw someone else was there, so they got all embarrassed. And then they said, it's improper. So they said, no, no, no. They know that we're dead already, and we have no feeling, and we don't enjoy it. And the reason why someone else, it causes him to be maher, to be turned on, is because he envisions the pleasure that the couple have from the affection they're showing to one another. When you see someone and you know there's no affection there, they're both dead, so then that doesn't cause anything. So that's what the Gemara over there records. Whatever all that Gemara means, but bottom line, these women, they knew the advantage of doing things in front of a mirror. Bringing a mirror out there and showing affection to one another in front of the mirror. And seeing it is something that would turn on the men more than just doing it. Seeing how the wife and the husband are hugging and whatever other affection they showed in front of the mirror. The Medrash says that they would draw water and God would see to it that the water would be filled with small fish. It's interesting that their Gemara records that small fish, they're plentiful and they reproduce quickly. And they reproduce in great numbers, not quickly, but in great numbers, and they cause a person to also be able to reproduce in great numbers. They're very healthy for people, the Gemara says. So they used to bring a pitcher filled, half filled with water and half filled with these small fish, and this is what they'd eat. They'd bake it out there. They wouldn't make it home. The husbands would fall out at work. They couldn't get home. So the Medrash records that this is the great merit of the women. We're going to see again and again that the women were the strength that drove the Jewish people out of Egypt and drove them into Israel. The women are our strength. So here also, we were working Befarech, different opinions what Befarech is, and the women had the strength to go through with it. And they made our lives bitter. They used to kill our children, used to put them in as part of the bricks. If a person didn't make enough bricks, so they take a child and put him instead. The Medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu was walking by and he saw a child being put in the bricks, still half alive. And he turned to God and he said, God, what? He turned in wonderment. How could all this be happening? Children, what did they do wrong? How could we let this happen? And God told him, I'm telling you that every child that's dying here, it's better for him and better for the world that he be dead. And if you don't believe me, take one out and see what happens with him. And Moshe Rabbeinu took one out. And he's the one that caused the Egel. He caused a lot of trouble for the Jewish people, that one. And that was when Moshe Rabbeinu wondered, Ribbon Shalom, how do you let this happen? And that's a lesson in one of the understandings that we see in Eov as to why bad things happen in this world. There are a few arguments. One of the arguments is you don't really know what's bad. You don't know what's good. It seems bad, but we don't know what's bad. So that's one argument. So the king of Egypt, his stargazers tell him, they view into the stars and they see that in the near future, the redeemer of the Jewish people is going to be born. So the king of Egypt gets worried and he calls the midwives and he tells them, do me a favor, as you give birth to the kids, I'm going to give you a sign how you know who's male and who's female. The children that are born face down, they're male, because the normal way that a husband and wife are together, the husband is on top and he's face down. The wife is on bottom and she's face up. So they come out that way too. The males are face down and the females are face up. Now nowadays, that's not the way children are born. But I guess in their times that's the way it was. Who knows? But that's the sign he told them. You see a child face down, do something to make him die. So that when he comes out, you'll say, it's stillborn. Poor mother, the baby died in childbirth. And no one's going to notice. Now, when the king of Egypt called them in, he saw they were very good looking. So he wanted to take them for himself. And they were very pious women. They refused. They refused the king. They risked their lives. And I guess he needed them more than they needed him. So he let up. So the midwives were God-fearing. They didn't do what he told them. And not only didn't they kill the children, they sustained each child and they fed him and they clothed. They made sure the children stayed alive. They could have been neutral. Whoever dies, dies. Whoever stays alive, alive. No, they did the best job they possibly could. Now these two midwives, according to one opinion, was Moshe Rabbeinu's mother and his sister, Yocheved, who was an old lady already, and her daughter. And they were called Shifra and Pua. Shifra because like Shapir, good, she made the children good. And Pua because she used to, according to one understanding, she said poo, 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 poo to the baby. According to another understanding, she used to know the secret whisperings, incantations that could help a woman give birth quickly. So she knew how to do that. That's why she was called Pua. That she can make a sound like Pua and the child would come out quickly. So the king calls them in and he tells them, what you're doing? And they told him, look, the Jewish women are different. They're like animals. They don't need us. Each one of them is like a midwife unto herself. And, God saw what these midwives did and he blessed them, and that's why these midwives ultimately had the kahuna. Yocheved's son Aaron became the Kohen Gadol. They had the kingdom because Yocheved's daughter, the other midwife, was Miriam. And Miriam was a very sickly child. Miriam wasn't good looking at all. No one wanted to come close to her. No man wanted her. Now think about it. Her father was the chief rabbi. Her father was Amram. He was the leader. But no one wanted to go out with her. She couldn't get a date. No, that's what the Gemara says. No one wanted her. But there was a man by the name of Kalev ben Yefune. And Kalev said, gee, she's got a brother called Moshe. She's got a brother called Aaron. So she's not the greatest looking girl in the world. She's got some form of leprosy. I don't care. With brothers like that, I'm going to have good kids. She must be a wonderful woman. And so Kalev married her. He married the woman, the Shem Shemayim. Our sages say whoever marries a woman, the Shem Shemayim, it's as though he gave birth to her. And Kalev married her. And from that union, ultimately came David HaMelech. So they merited to have kings from them also. That's true. There was a daughter somewhere along the lineage, because we know Kalev ben Yefune and Miriam, they weren't from the tribe of Yehuda. But nonetheless, from them came the kings. And that was what they merited here for saving the children's lives. And it's interesting. A person would think, how do I ensure my home? I listen to the king. I don't mess with the king. He could kill me. I mean, he's killing babies right and left. He told me what to do. I got to think for myself, right? I should protect myself. These babies are going to die anyways. That's what happens. He gives a decree. We're throwing all the babies into the Nile. So these midwives could have said any reasoning, any logic they could have used and justified what they were doing, right? The baby's not yet alive. We could do this. We could do that. It's only an abortion. They could have figured out many explanations to justify the actions of doing what the king had told them. But they didn't do that. They risked their homes. They risked their lives. And they kept the babies alive. And we see that God paid them back. Midah keneged midah. Sometimes a person feels, look, God, look what I'm losing. I'll do what you want. But you know what I'm losing? Yeah, that's when we don't realize who's running the world. We all think that way. But if we'd realize who's running the world, we'd realize that we're doing for ourselves. We're not doing for God. God gave us these laws because they're the best possible way we could live. And that's what we see here. They could have thought, gee, what a favor we're doing for God. We're going to save homes in the Jewish people and we're risking our own home. And really, they built their own home. By doing this, they merited to be Kohanim, they merited to be kings. And we should all learn from them. We're out of time, I'm sorry. But if we have time, maybe we'll continue a different time.